Sandy Toksvig, and thank you for joining me for the News Quiz Extra, coming from the Radio Theatre in London's Broadcasting House. The News Quiz Extra is a special longer edit of the News Quiz, and this week's has a Christmassy flavour. So imagine it as if the News Quiz is the turkey and the News Quiz Extra is the trimmings, the prawn cocktail starter and the ill-advised second helping of trifle. Rennie's at the ready, people. So without any further ado, on with the show.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a confusing correction from the Jersey Evening Post, read by Peter Donaldson.
Christmas Crooners is at the Opera House tonight and not tomorrow, as stated in yesterday's diary page.
Our thanks to Tracy Peters for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Susan Kalman and Miles Jupp. And opposite them on my left, Alexi Sale and Jeremy Hardy. Susan, which star in the East can no longer be followed?
This is about the death of Kim Jong-il.
Yes.
I actually briefly for a moment thought you were upset there, Sam.
I was pretending to be a North Korean newscaster.
I see. It's a shame I've got this story because I often get confused regarding which one's which, North and South Korea, which is a bad mistake to make in terms of the two. And in all honesty...
You need Korea's advice.
Yay!
Oh, quite satire. Right.
And in all honesty, I genuinely, because I've previously got it wrong and I've previously got into a bit of trouble, I sing a small song to remind myself which one's which. To the tune of Mamma Mia. And it's North Korea, it is communist. No, no, they will never let you go. And then I remember which one it is. So he died, and his son, I think, is potentially taking over, along with the military and his uncle as well. So they're not quite clear who's going to be in charge. But reading the biographies of him, he apparently wrote 1,500 novels in his 3 years at university.
1,500?
1,500.
Wow.
That's vastly more than I achieved in my 4 years at university.
Well, according to his official biography, the dear leader could predict the weather and didn't defecate. the exact opposite of Michael Fish.
Is Michael Fish particularly known for defecating on the news?
I was, to be honest, more thinking about the weather, if I'm completely honest. Apparently his all-time favourite film was The Eternal Bosom of Hot Love. Interestingly, my nickname for Jeremy.
I found it confusing. I was watching TV with the sound off. I thought Bono had died.
It was a sort of a look, wasn't there?
Yeah, sunglasses, dyed hair.
Yeah.
Megalomania.
I wonder whether it'll say on his tombstone, I told you I was ill.
I liked the fact they were so small. I thought this was a good thing, that you could appear on all their stamps life-size. I thought this was...
But the national grieving was quite... Whether it was set up or not, I'm not quite sure, but the scenes of national grief and weeping, and I don't know if one of our political leaders, heaven forbid, passed away, there would be the similar kind of genuine warmth and grief and crying.
When I used to work briefly for an organisation called Worldwide Television News, and we used to run a pool every year on obituaries, and you had to put 10 names in and £10, and whoever got the most names got all the money in the pot. And so randomly through the year, somebody would die that we weren't expecting, and you just hear one voice going, "Yes!"
You think most political assassinations are inspired by sweepstakes?
I think so.
Somebody at Kennedy and they were determined to get him.
Amid a massive outpouring of grief, North Korean leader Kim Jong-il has died at the age of 69. He'd been in power for 17 years and is likely to be succeeded by his 28-year-old son, Kim Jong-un, who has been named the great successor after James Murdoch sold the domain name. Reports said that Kim Jong-il died on the train of exhaustion, known in this country as anything operated by Virgin. Kim Jong-un could soon be the leader of a country with 1.2 million soldiers and an advanced nuclear weapons development program. It's like putting Jeremy Clarkson on the switchboard at the Samaritans. 2 points to Susan. Miles, who has promised to be a reformed character in 2012?
Is this Nick Clegg?
It is Mr. Clegg, yes.
Nick Clegg, who's not had a great 2011 by all
by
accounts.
Lib Dem standards, no.
In terms of having a good 2012, I think he's got more chance of representing China in the 4x100 women's relay.
Actually, I'm up for that. So.
No, your hurdles.
Oh, sorry.
He's had a horrible year, and he's very cross with Cameron. I mean, at the moment, it's sort of early days still, I suppose, in terms of simmering rage. At the moment, he just is rude about him in print and occasional interview, but it can't be long before Cameron comes home early and he gets sort of hit over the head with a lead pipe wrapped in carpet, and Clegg makes his way to New Haven and escapes. I think I'm thinking of the right story. But yeah, marriage allowances.
Yes, there's all sorts
Cameron
of things.
Says, you know, Clegg says getting married is not about. It's not a sort of cashback.
It's because Cameron wants her to be. Well, he says he wants the government to celebrate marriage through the tax system.
Well, that's. I remember when we put our wedding list together, we said we don't really want any gifts this year. We would like you to celebrate our wedding through the tax gift system.
It's like a wedding party planned by HMRC. It's a idiot's notion. Surely you get married to have somebody to argue with as the nights draw in. I think that's the main reason.
You get married so that one day you'll find yourself sitting out on a chair outside a changing room with your head in your hands.
Do you know, it's like therapy, this programme, honestly. The two of them, because isn't Clegg talking about creating an open society, and Cameron wants this big society, open and big. It's going to be drafty. That's all I think. Actually, Nick Clegg's wife is Spanish. I think under Tory plans, she's going to be deported. Nick Clegg has announced that in 2012 he will prioritise a tax on the wealthy, bank bonuses and reform to the House of Lords. And haven't we heard this before? That's the trouble with Christmas, nothing but repeats. Clegg's renewed vigour comes after he was visited by three ghosts who showed him his past, his future, and most terrifying of all, his present. Business Secretary and fellow Lib Dem Vince Cable has also warned the banks that they face radical reform. Radical reform is like normal reform, but done on skateboards. 2 points, 2 miles. Alexei, listen to this. Alexei, why have expats got money to burn?
Because people living in Miami and Malaga are getting their winter fuel allowance, and somebody in the Lords has suggested that they give their winter fuel allowance to charity.
Mm.
But people in Malaga, they're very cold, those tiles.
I give an extra point if anybody knows which Lord it was who decided to do this.
I think Oakshott.
I've got Lord Freud.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
Lord Freud,
yes. And what I love about Lord Freud, he was something very big in the city. When he was 53, which is exactly the same age as I am, he decided to retire because he was bored of the city. And he's a man who should tell us what we should do with our winter fuel allowance, I think.
I mean, I think we shouldn't be too glib on Radio 4 about the issue of winter fuel payments, because let's be honest, a harsh winter goes through Radio 4 listeners like a knife through butter. So we should be fairly supportive.
Surely the cheapest way to stay warm in Spain is to burn euros.
But there is, I mean, not that the, it's the I know a lot of people who are only being kept alive by their freedom pass, you know, the bus pass. That's all that they've got to live for, really, you know, which is another one of those benefits which is given to everybody regardless of, you know, wealth, isn't it? You know, it's not means tested or anything. So you see Mick Jagger on the 29, which is, they call the crazy train.
You get different amounts of money depending how old you are for winter fuel. You get more if you're over 80 and less if you're under 80.
Oh, my mother's rolling in it. Honest to God, my mother's 96. She's so rich. She's rolling in it. And she got one of them pendants, you know, where you press. And I got a phone call the other day. She said, this is Maisie Caroline, Mr. Sale. Your mother's... nothing to worry about. Your mother's parasol's blown on the roof of her shed. And she's used her pendant. We've explained it's not an emergency. And she's become quite abusive. She's going to kill me when she hears that. She came to a book out here, so I wrote a memoir about it. She came to a book reading that I did and heckled me.
Lies!
I was concerned about what age you get the winter fuel allowance, because I'm spending Christmas at the home of my in-laws who have no central heating whatsoever, and I just wondered if there was something I could do to maybe get radiators fixed up before my... arrive. I mean, there's an arga and a wood-burning stove, and there's a Roman slave boy who blows bellows. But a radiator's nothing.
But think about universal provision is it's provided equal to everybody. You don't say, oh, well, big, strong people aren't entitled to protection from the police, or incontinent people aren't entitled to help from the fire brigade, because they can put it out themselves. Yeah. You know? The whole point of universality is everyone is entitled to these things equally, isn't it?
You have to keep doing it. It's a very important thing because the older you get, the less resourceful you are.
Yeah.
So, for example, I lived in... when I was at university, we never had any heating in the flats that I rented. And so in order to keep warm in the winter, we used to wrap ourselves in tin foil because it kept you warm. And it was
fine. Pretending you'd run a marathon.
Yeah. I used to kind of go, oh, I'm awful tired.
Do you mean just the sort of tin foil you'd wrap a turkey in? That?
Yes, just wrap yourself in it. Now, the only problem is that there was always a concern that if you had some form of accident, which being a student can occur, that they would find four women wrapped in tin foil on their living room floor. And you can just imagine the police just going, well, this is a tough one, this one. I don't know what they were doing.
Despite many living in Spain, the number of expats claiming winter fuel allowances has increased by 50% in the last 5 years. The Daily Mail expressed outrage at the number of winter fuel payments made to expats, calling for a return to the tried and tested system of keeping warm by burning Catholics. Also this week, Lord Freud suggested that better-off pensioners in the UK donate their winter fuel payments to those in greater need. Apparently, of the elderly recipients of winter fuel allowance, 33,000 live in Spain, a further 17,000 live in France, 6,000 in the Republic of Ireland, 5,000 in Cyprus, and one lives in a storage cupboard in the Strictly Come Dancing studio. 2 points to, 2 points to Alexei. Jeremy, who is being ever so civil about the State of the Union?
Sir Gus O'Donnell, head of the civil service, who predicts, has foretold that the UK will be broken up. The Act of Union was 1800 and we became United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland. Then in 1921, at the end of the War of Independence, Ireland was partitioned, which brought peace after only 82 years, so successfully that partition was then used in India, Cyprus and Palestine to great effect. And then we became United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. So the difference between Great Britain and the United Kingdom is that Northern Ireland is not part of Britain. Many unionists think that it's part of Britain. It's actually part of Ireland. I think aerial photography is on my side in that. but Gus O'Donnell thinks it'll all break up because the jocks, I'm talking about you, Kelman, they hate us. They hate us, the jocks, and they want to leave the UK. So what I say is England and Wales should leave the UK first, and then you would be stuck with the Democratic Unionist Party.
Does this mean we could have a king or queen of Scotland? Wasn't Idi Amin the last one?
It's Susan Boyle. It's a shoo-in.
Surely the most famous family in Scotland is the Crankies.
Yes. Don't. For a number of reasons.
Really?
Just leave it to Oxfig. Did you read that article?
What article?
This will never be broadcast, but I'm going to tell you anyway, Sandy. The rumour is there was a kiss and tell about to happen, so they opened their hearts to the Sunday Mail about their swinging sex life.
Oh, now, sorry, I've got a little bit of sick coming up in the back of my throat.
I don't know if you've ever read anything and then realised that your retinas are forever burned. But someone forwarded it to me. I thought, oh, there's the thing about the Crankies. I'm going to see him in pantomime on the 28th, because it's the Crankies and John Barrowman in 3D, even though it's on stage, so surely it's all 3D, but I'm not one to argue, right? I'll read it. And the other thing that happens is, Irvin Welsh, right, of Trainspotting fame, once decided he was going to do a film about the Crankies. Now, that sounds magic to me, Irvin Welsh doing a film about the Crankies. And I petitioned for the part because I thought, I was made for that part. Like, I'm Mad Jimmy Cranky. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, and?
I decided not to do it after all. But I've still got that still on the slate. I think me and Miles could possibly do that one day.
I'd be bang up for that.
How's your jock accent, Miles?
I've actually done a pantomime in Scotland. I did one in Aberdeen, myself and Marty Webb. But the best fun I had was being on stage and getting slightly distracted because in the wings, the pantomime cow is having a fight. Just on its own, because it turned out the front end is called the back end of slut.
How many cows schizophrenic in that way? I was backstage at the Egham Playhouse, I think. It's a little theatre in Egham in Surrey once. And one Christmas, I was doing a show, and there was a Barney the Purple Dinosaur costume in the wings. And for a laugh, I thought I would put on the hand. And I shoved my arm into the arm of the costume, and there was about 4 pints of sweat in the fingers.
Can I just understand how we got from a discussion? So Gus O'Donnell, Britain's most senior public servant, has questioned whether the campaign for Scottish independence could spell the end for the United Kingdom within a few years. And if the Scots do get independence, Sean Connery, for one, will be delighted. And I'm sure will send his congratulations from his house in Marbella.
No, be fair, he is a true patriot because he refuses to lose his Scottish accent no matter what the nationality of the character that he's supposed to be playing.
The division of the UK is a complicated process which involves dividing it between your three daughters and going mad on a moor before dying of grief. That is a joke for which none of you are worthy. 2 points to Jeremy, and at the end of round one, the scores are everybody's got 4 points so far. We start round two with a sign spotted at the William Harvey Hospital in Ashford, Kent.
Spice of Life Restaurant. Find us in the basement. Next to the mortuary.
Thanks to Mary Gold for sending us that. Susan, who decided to steal bronze when there wasn't a copper in sight?
It's a story about the increasing theft of metal, because the price of metal has gone up in recent years, so people have been stealing things like the wires and signals in railway lines, and a statue, Barbara Hepworth's statue, was stolen from a park because you can sell on the metal for a high price. Not all metal, obviously. Not just like if you collect Kit Kat wrappers, that's not going to get you anything.
You can wrap yourself in them, though, for the winter if you're cold.
We should have known this was coming because of all those cash for gold adverts. You know, have you got any unwanted gold lying around your house? No, I don't. Miles, you probably have got tons of gold lying around your house, don't you?
Probably.
I had my toilet roof stolen twice. And the second time, I got a letter from victim support telling me that as a repeat victim of crime, I was now entitled to counselling.
I'm sorry to be very stupid, but why does your toilet have a separate roof? See, they have this.
It's a guest toilet.
Oh, because I was going to say they have this new thing with indoor plumbing, which is absolutely fantastic. And enables you to keep an eye on the toilet roof.
What was the roof? Was it lead?
Lead, yeah.
Oh, lead,
it was
lead.
Did you not bother with it in the end, then?
I just sit there now. People can look down, because it's in the basement. Just look down.
The neighbours that overlook you, do they get counselling having to open it?
You think if you go and see the counsellor, though, you could talk, you know, I'm 60, I'm feeling the sense of emptiness, and she said, no, you just got to talk about your toilet roof.
That's it.
You can't talk about anything else.
I got a friend who lives in Bradford, and she had her shed rustled. So she went out into the garden, everything that had been in the shed was lying neatly on the grass, and the shed was gone. I don't know if shed rustling is the shed term rustling. For it, but taken, just the shed.
Lots of white vans have a sign saying, no tools left inside overnight, only in the driving seat during the day. I I've been doing this for 28 years. If I could do something else, I would. Leave me alone.
Oh, I love how you bring the Christmas spirit to it. Surely spotting a metal thief is easy. They must have a fantastically heavy bag that says swag on it. It must just weigh a ton. That statue was enormous, wasn't it?
It was huge. Absolutely huge.
7 foot. Really nice. Dulwich Park as well.
Yeah, it's wicked.
They should be executed.
Yeah, they should be executed.
Well, there are certain crimes that you should be executed for, like stealing beautiful works of art and being too pleased with yourself. And wearing red trousers if you're not Santa.
But surely, if you're going to sell this art for scrap, somebody's going to spot it. I mean, say I stole the Angel of the North. Do you know what I mean? Quite a tricky thing to get rid of at the yard or wherever you do it.
That's what's good about it, is you can go art shopping at scrap metal yards. You know, you can buy a Henry Moore by weight.
They're quite interesting places, scrap.
No, but I'm worried about this because I'm worried we're all wasting our time. Maybe everybody at home has sold their radio aerial for cash. But nobody's listening now because all the metal's gone.
It's Christmas, they're not listening anymore.
Oh, fine, okay. Scrap metal thieves have stolen the Barbara Hepworth sculpture Two Forms Divided Circle from Dulwich Park just one day after Scotland Yard launched a dedicated unit to deal with metal thefts. Mr. Moore from Dulwich Park Friends said the criminals broke into the park through a gate. Why didn't they just take the gate? Talk about not seeing the wood for the trees. Dulwich Park Friends, that's got to be one of the least successful American television transfers, hasn't it? Sounds like a dogging club. Scotland Yard's new metal theft unit said they'd investigate just as soon as they found out who pinched the badges off the front of their helmets. 2 points to Susan. Miles, listen to this. Miles, what happens to me at 33?
Is it the result of a survey or... No, it's some sort of scientific... What's it? When you get to 33, you suddenly stop being quite so selfish. You stop being so me, this new research has found. And so there's basically... That means that you're justified scientifically in being selfish until you reach the age of 33. I'm 32 currently. I've got 8 months of perfectly justifiable selfish behaviour. In which I can just do what I like. I can put a bag on the seat next to me on the train. I can reserve a parking space by just leaving a bin in it. I can put a spin cycle on at 11:15 at night and just... all of these things I can start doing. Presumably that's the age that you sort of settle down to it and you suddenly think, gosh, I'm not the most important person in the world anymore.
Russell Brand got married, didn't he, at 34, and he's now a sort of genial, slightly camp bloke. Well, was that Russell Grant? Is it...
Well, it's interesting because if you think 33, that is the age that Jesus was.
Jesus
when he
was
died.
33.
So,
yeah.
Goodness me, if he'd been able to get past that. you know, you think what he'd have been able to achieve if he, you know, once he dropped all the selfish stuff. you know, he wouldn't just be curing lepers, he'd be, you know, funding their, you know, small business startups. he wouldn't just massage people's feet, you know, entire, you know, holistic treatments, hot stone therapy, that sort of thing. Yeah, recycling, he could have been a blood donor.
I do think having kids makes you less selfish. Unless you've, you know, snatched them from a maternity ward, obviously. Yeah.
Is that the age that people get married, sort of, now, 33?
Is it? Maybe
people
that's
kind
what
of think, well, I've sort of done it with everybody else will let me.
But do you think it works in cycles, Alexi? Because I wonder if it's sort of birth to 33 selfish, 33 to 66 selfless, 66 to 99 demanding, criticising, pain in the backside. I just wonder if it works.
But I don't think that's true. I think people get more insular as they get older because they said that people are more selfish except when it comes to voluntary work, it said. I thought, well, isn't that one of the really key indicators of selflessness? They said, yeah, apart from voluntary work. Because if you look at radical activism, most of the people are sort of under 30. They're our most passionate people trying to, you know, occupying the City of London. They tend to be under 33 because their lives are just full of optimism and passion. Because when you're under 33, you're not spending your weekends in Topps tiles. And once you are, any hope of changing the world is kind of gone, really.
Or they've been forced into voluntary work because we're in a recession and there isn't anything for them to do that they'd be paid for, Jeremy. And all your Bolshevik friends are just out of work.
I think the word Bolshevik kind of dates you there.
I do try and read around the subject.
I don't know. I think I get more selfish as I get older. I've got less time. I spend enough time doing things I don't want to do. For example, watch The West Wing, had a conversation with my better half, as you do. Which character would you be in The West Wing? That's a normal conversation that you have.
CJ, said, would you be CJ?
No, I said I'd be the president. Better half says you can't be the president, you're not American. I said, this is just a fictional conversation. Can you let me have it? 5 hours later, we're still having the discussion. That was 3 years ago. That is still rankling with me. I wasn't allowed to be... So I don't have time to be nice to people. Maybe it's because I don't have children. I've just got the cats.
Yeah. I'm old. I'm 53 and I've got 3 kids. I am completely selfless. I only think of others and what they can do for me. Research by the Make-A-Wish Foundation has concluded that people become less selfish after the age of 33. At this age, most people start thinking of others before themselves, while the rest go into politics. This selflessness in older people applies to almost all areas of life, apart from volunteering, where young people do more. For people not familiar with the terminology, volunteering is what replaced the job market. 2 points to Miles. Alexi, which elephant in the room shouldn't be the elephant in the room this Christmas?
Is this Christmas is the best time to tell family members that they're fat?
Yes.
Who does this research? I mean, it's just... It's like the British Taekwondo Association.
No, it was the National Obesity Forum.
Oh, right. Actually, my mother said to me, this was last year, I was about to put the first forkful of turkey in my mouth, and she said, have you ever thought of eating less?
Can you imagine going to the Christmas party of the National Obesity Forum?
Did they test, using fat people, testing them 365 days a year, and when it was Christmas, the person was slightly less bruised emotionally by being told this?
I don't know, maybe they just think if you upset them with the truth, you can always give them a bit of cake.
Everyone's fat at Christmas. I suppose if you say you're fat at Christmas, you think, well, I'm just jolly in a Santa-like way.
But how can you lose weight at Christmas? We serve brandy on a cake. We wrap sausages in bacon. We decorate our plants with chocolate. It's not a good time, do they? Oh, I know. But
what they said was that the time at which all of your friends and family are in the one room, which in my experience essentially is a powder keg of latent emotion, stress and resentment from the past however many decades of your family life, that's the one time just after your mother's mentioned the fact that, for example, you gave up a lucrative career in law to be a comedian to say, well, thanks, Mum, by the way, you're looking a bit porky. That's really... saying, you know, if you have a concern about someone's health, instead of taking them to one side gently on your own and saying, I have a concern about your health, is instead just to say, that was a lovely trifle. Right then, Porky, pass the turkey.
Well, it's all this thing about being straightforward. Doctors and other health professionals should also tell people that they're fat rather than obese, said Anne Milton, who is England's public health minister, rather than a troublemaking cow.
Easy, isn't it? Christmas is not necessarily a good time to tell people that they need to lose weight. It's just an easy time. Yeah. It's lots of opportunities present themselves. If someone, for instance, opens a jumper and they say, I hope it fits. They offered me an extra large, but I said there's no way he can be an extra... Oh, I... No, I should have got an extra large. Look at that. I said to the man in the shop, there's no way he could have put on... No, but you have. You've really... Gosh, you really have, looking at you now. Goodness me, you've really piled on the...
And they can't answer back because they've got a mouthful, so...
My mother always does the opposite of what Miles was suggesting. God bless her, she's an optimist. She always buys me a T-shirt every year with a sequined cat on it. And she always buys me, like, a size 8. And she goes, oh, it's a lovely wee T-shirt. Put it on. I don't know if you've ever seen it, like a sausage bursting out of its skin. But I sit at Christmas dinner wearing essentially a child's T-shirt. Maybe that's her way of saying, lose weight, Susan. Or maybe it's just the daughter she always dreamed of.
My family were, you know, atheist, communist Jews. So Christmas was surprisingly important in our house. He used to get me these terrible wooden toys from, like, East Germany they bought in the Communist Party shop, you know, and these terrible, like, little Russian dolls, when you unscrewed them, there was, like, a scribbled note from Alexander Solzhenitsyn.
Bring joy to the heart of any child.
Yeah. I always thought Santa was a bit like Stalin, really, because they were both rotund gentlemen with facial hair, you know, both subsisted on systems that were based on slave labour. So
Stalin and his elves. I never thought of it that way. Yeah. I don't like that.
Come to Uncle Joe. Confess the crimes of your parents. And you will get a carrot.
The National Obesity Forum has claimed that Christmas is the perfect time to be honest with relatives and confront them about their weight issue. Scientists said that if a loved one is starting to appear larger, you should think about raising the issue, to which I would add, check they're not just walking towards you first. This advice will be added to in February, when experts will recommend that Valentine's Day is the best time to admit to that affair. Actually, the National Obesity website warns of a slow creeping obesity epidemic, and I think that is your problem right there. Because if they were moving a bit faster, they'd have lost that weight by the time they get to you. At the end of round two, the scores are: Susan and Miles have got 8 points, but so too have Alexi and Jeremy. Susan, who ruffled some feathers with her dogged determination?
Oh, yes, this was one of my favourite stories of this week. It was a woman called Margaret McKeever or McIver, something like that, and she was minding her own business one day in her kitchen, and she looked into her garden and saw none other than a hawk attempting to carry away her chihuahua. Now, Margaret, the plucky lady that she is, jumped into the garden and saved the chihuahua. She had to do this no less than three times because the hawk pursued the chihuahua into her house. I don't know if you've seen Clash of the Titans with a kraken, but it was that kind of monumental, but woman against hawk. Now, I think essentially we're all responsible for the attack on this chihuahua, because what we've started to do, certainly in Britain, is mess up the food chain. I was in a shopping centre the other day, and there was that fish pedicure thing.
Fish don't have feet.
You don't...
Someone's got a scam going there.
Yeah, I know. You put your feet in a bowl of fish and they eat the dead skin. We're essentially giving fish a taste of human flesh. And as it goes up the food chain, eventually the squirrels that I see on my morning constitutional to Greg's will be looking at me... as if I'm not simply the benign human that occasionally leaves them some nuts when it's cold, but instead as food. Soon we will all be Margaret McIver fighting off hawks. Hedgehogs will be our mortal enemy in this country unless we stop fish pedicures.
But what was the hawk thinking? I mean, surely a chihuahua's like celery. Do you know what I mean? The amount of calories you get would hardly be worth chewing, I would have thought. If your dog can be carried off by a bird, it doesn't deserve to be called a dog.
I suppose it depends how big the hawk was. We've got no information regarding how... The hawk could have been the size of a plane.
Maybe it was a celebrity hawk who wanted to have a chihuahua to take to, like, gallery openings, and, you know, in a sort of Paris Hilton stroke Mickey Rourke way.
I think there's a lot wrong with this story.
This
is basically like when someone's done something and the police put them up at a press conference and say, look, can you make an appeal? And then they plant a couple of questions with journalists or whatever, and then these people crack, and that's what's happened with this woman. Someone knows her dog's in a bit of a state, and she goes, oh, yeah, I was a hawk. A hawk came into the house and attacked the dog. That's all it was. And they've got to put difficult questions to her. You know, where are all the feathers? Why do some of the bruises look like they've been made by a walking stick? All of these little questions.
If this was America, there'd be a True Life movie made of her just now, probably with Meryl Streep in it, as a plucky lady fighting off a hawk. And the chihuahua would be played by Jack Black. And
she probably made it up just because she wanted a visit from victim support. She wanted free counselling, because counselling's about £60 an hour, and she thought, if I fake a crime...
If she was attacked by the hawk three times, then she would qualify for counselling. Yeah.
The hawk would qualify for counselling. No, the dog would qualify for counselling, not...
Yeah, but you own
the dog. No, because my roof would have been qualified for counselling.
Well, I'm not surprised. The thing it's seen, you taking heavy dumps on it.
A 74-year-old Margaret McKeever from Huddersfield wrestled her pet chihuahua Rizzo to safety after it was attacked by a hawk in the garden. The bird continued to chase the dog into the kitchen before Mrs. McKeever grabbed it and threw it out. The brave pensioner said the dog was traumatised for 2 days, which is the longest the little rat can retain a memory. Chihuahuas are what they call handbag dogs, in that they have the same IQ as one. Oh, there'll be letters. After the attack, the bird sat menacingly on the garden fence before there was a whistle and it returned to Michael Gove's arm. Points to Susan. Jeremy, listen to this.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.
Jeremy, who's coming to town?
Santa Claus.
Yes, 2 points.
Well, that's So it is. No, it is. Yeah. It is that time of year, and yeah. I think we should remember exactly what it's, because 2,000 and some years ago, a humble Jewish carpenter called Joseph, living in Nazareth, set off to Bethlehem because he had to pay his taxes. He had to pay his taxes because he didn't run a mobile phone network or a high street clothing chain. He went with his heavily pregnant wife. Bear in mind the level of health care that they had then was roughly equivalent to what it will be when Andrew Lansley's finished with the NHS. And they've got a 70-mile walk. Got to Bethlehem, and of course there's nowhere to stay because it's Christmas. Mm. And the only place available, the only place is the Premier Inn. And Mary said, you know what, I'd rather sleep in the road than stay in the because it's got as much soul as Joss Stone. But anyway, they go to an inn, right? And the innkeeper says, I'm sorry, we have no accommodation. And Joseph says, but we have travelled such a long way and my wife is very tired. And then they have to go to a number of inns in order to use up all of the kids whose parents would have gone spare if they hadn't got a speaking part. And finally, they get to one where the bloke says, well, I don't have a room, but there is a stable. And so Mary says, oh, I've read about these manger bursts in Grazia magazine. They're terribly fashionable among the sort of women whose naive idea of childbirth is punished by emergency caesarean. So they go, she gives birth in the stable around singing animals and wise men with coat hangers sticking out the back of their heads. This is the historical fact. Now what we've got is the Christmas that we do is kind of a mishmash. It's basically a bit of Hanukkah, a bit of Saturnalia, a bit of pagan solstice, a bit of Celtic mysticism, a lot of Phil Spector. And of course, the Roman Saturnalia is all the misrule and all that, and then there's a light to Hanukkah, and there's and the German stuff actually is a big thing, because the Victorians really invented the modern Christmas because Prince Albert, of course, was German. And today we see all these, you know, German markets. And in preparation for that, of course, the Germans flattened many of our town centres in the 1940s. So that a few short years later, they would be forgiven and there would be sheds full of former war criminals selling pig guts stuffed into condoms. And we'd all say, hurrah for our jolly European partners. Let's forget about everything they've done. So that's Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho. And I think Santa does exist.
So do I.
I think it will be revealed, and Richard Dawkins will cack himself. Richard Dawkins will wake up in the middle of the night, and there will be Santa, Moses, Jesus and God saying, so, you don't believe in us?
Well, we know that reindeer can fly over the rooftops because we saw that genuine footage on Frozen Planet. My daughter came home from school when she was about four, my oldest daughter, and they were dividing out the parts in the nativity play, and I said, darling, it doesn't matter what you get, it's about being in the play, it's very exciting, so just be really pleased whatever you get. So she came running out, she said, Mum, it's so exciting, I'm going to be the penguin. Without whom the story might never have happened.
That's true. According to Dan Brown, the Gospel of Pingu was erased by the Vatican as part of a conspiracy.
You know, I thought that was bad, but this year a friend of mine, her daughter was an aubergine. Bizarre. According to the newspapers, so it must be true, Britain should prepare to be visited by a man bearing gifts later this month. The press had varying views on the event, with a Guardian investigation finding that Santa Claus knows whether you've been good or bad because he listens to all your voicemail messages. And the Daily Express warning that having a large foreigner stuck in your chimney could dramatically reduce the value of your home. Theresa May denied that there was nothing that the border agency could do and refuted reports that if Santa did settle in the UK, he would have the right to remain because he owns a reindeer. The Coalition were hoping to stage their own nativity play but couldn't find three wise men. Before we reveal the final Christmassy scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Miss Kalman.
This is from John Thompson. There was a competition in a Lake District pub to find the world's biggest liar, and they were told, Paul Burrows is the reigning world's biggest liar. By day, he works in advertising.
Mr. Jupp.
This is from the I newspaper, sent in by Marianne Lederman. It's on the subject of the 7 billionth baby. It's not how many people that's the issue, it's who and where they are. A British Cocker Spaniel has a bigger carbon paw print than the average human being in India. The average American consumes as much as 32 Kenyans.
Mr. Sale.
This is from John Fox. It's the Staffordshire Weekend Sentinel. It's Stoke City manager Tony Pulis talking about when he signed Peter Crouch from Spurs. He is reported as saying he's a great lad as long as he works hard and does his business on the field. We've got no problem.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Tim Moss, and it's a list of classes at London School of Life. Stress with Angela Clough, self-improvement with Oliver Berkman, and the impossibility of sex with Susan Quilliam.
Let's take a look at the final scores. Susan and Miles have got 12 points, but this week's winners for Christmas cheer alone are Alexei and Jeremy with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Radio Times sent to us by Alison Burnley.
7:30 p.m, waking up to insomnia. Geraint Vincent gets to the bottom of what's keeping us awake. Repeated at 2:35 a.m.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Susan Kalman, Miles Jupp, Alexei Sale and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chair's script was written by Gareth Gwynne, Rodri Crooks and Andy Walton, with additional material by Tom Neenan and Benjamin Partridge. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.